I'm glad the camera angle sets. People can't see the rest of the chaos in the room. It's all kinds of mess in here. And the other thing as well is, like, we only ever put these lights on when we're recording the podcast, and it's the only time I ever look up, and it's like a Halloween store, the amount of cobwebs in here. You know those, like, pop-up ones that you get? I hurt my neck today, and I'm training. So you punch me in the side of the head with that kettlebell. Are we recording, Jamie? Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. We're back for 2026. I hope you all had a good holiday, new year. I hope 2026 is rolling along for you very nicely. It is for us. You've been out in Spain, my beautiful love. You've got a shadow across your face. Are we all good with that, Jamie? Oh, no, we're good. You're going to have to just keep looking forward, because otherwise you're getting a shadow across your face. There we go. People want to see your face. That's pretty much everybody tuning in is here looking at your face. They're not listening. They're probably watching it on mute, in fact. Zoomed in on you. So you've been in Spain, and yeah. You've been training, helping Piera out. She's got a fight coming up. And I've been here clearing out.
Yes.
And lifting heavy, which is, we've got new sponsors. We've got Athlete Factory, which we'll talk about in a second. We're going to talk about them a bit in the main event, because you'll see them in the UFC 324 countdown show. Paddy trains there. Paul Reed has done your S&C and your weight cuts for ages. He's awesome. Anyway, that is like the center for athletic achievement and refinement in the current day in the UK, would you not say? So they are a wonderful sponsor of the podcast. And Zapply, you've got to check these out. So I've been using this stuff for about a month now. It was Testo Charge. The new ones are called T1. 14 ingredients, all the normal stuff that you're going to want: zinc, magnesium, D3, ashwagandha, all stuff that's like calibrated and clinically tested to make sure that you're maintaining normal testosterone levels. Very, very difficult to do in the modern day. Stress, lack of sleep, too much screen time, etc., etc. There are about 200,000 people using this already, and it's really good. Featured in Men's Health. Make sure you check them out. So the website is TryZapply, and the code is Outlaw15. You get 15% off. This is the creatine, and on Paul Reed's recommendation, Athlete Factory, mm-hmm. I'm on this every day. This is actually a new bag that I've not broken into yet. I'm starting this tomorrow. But spoonful in a black coffee in the morning. That's Paul's recommendation. I'm loving this. I'm loving the T1, the Testo Charge. Great stuff. Make sure you check them out. Thank you for coming on board as a sponsor. And should we get into it? Should we get into the podcast?
Yeah.
Well, talk about Athlete Factory, because I know we're going to talk about it in a bit, but just talk about Paul Reed and what is set up at Athlete Factory. You're going to see it on the countdown show. You'll see the AstroTurf and the guys doing the jumping up and down it. And go on, tell us about it.
Like, Paul Reed he's very, very, he's just a special guy. Like, fully dedicated to the sport, loves the sport, does it for the love of the sport. You'll see him flying to like IMAF competitions and just to help people out. Yeah. So that's just the type of person that he is. And the gym is beautiful. When you're there, it's like high ceilings and it's like this warehouse, and you just feel like training. It looks very professional. The people are very professional.
Hey, what about the food upstairs as well?
Oh, yeah.
He's got this kitchen set up upstairs. What's it called?
I think Vortex Cafe now.
It's amazing. The food, the cheesecake.
Yeah, biscotti cheesecake.
The whole time
cheesecake.
We were in Vegas, you were like, I can't wait to get back to the UK, go and get one of
those. Man, I was so, yeah. It was like the downfall of doing it there. Like, couldn't get the meal prep from Paul's place.
But you know, the times when he's been, like, he's been at a lot of your fight weeks, like making sure your food's organized. Was it St. Louis? We were in St. Louis and we were in an Airbnb and he was staying in the same block and he brought this food and I'm like, Paul, we've got to make weight. And he's like cheesecake and all kinds of stuff. I'm like,
yeah.
Like, you're eating more than me and you're cutting weight. It was really
impressive. Like ice cream and it like caramelized the banana on top and like with rice cakes. It was pretty good. I was having a good time.
Yeah. So you'll see Paul Reed working with Paddy Pimblett. He's doing the S&C for all the next gen guys. You were talking yesterday about Luke Riley, who I'm sure a lot of you will know now.
He's over in Thailand and he looks massive.
Paul is an S&C wizard. So check out Athlete Factory, check out Vortex, check out Zapply. I'm going to take my T1 now. Should we get into it? We're going to do the main card for UFC 324.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be as consistent as we can this year because we miss you guys. And Jamie's missed us. He's so happy to be back in the studio. you want to see a big grin on his face. His coffee's gone cold. We've missed his cold coffee as well, haven't we? You know. Okay. So we're going to start with... There's some good fights on this card, though. You know the one that... I don't know how I didn't see this one. Figueiredo against Nurmagomedov.
That's insulting not to have him on the main card. Just skill-wise...
That's a hell of a fight, that is.
Yeah.
I know we're not going to talk. There's a couple of fights I am excited. Like Alex Perez, Charles Johnson is going to be a great fight. Krylov against Modestus is going to be a good fight as well.
Mm.
I feel like Krylov's got a slight grappling advantage there, but if that's on the feet, that's
and Ateba, because he was on the same card as when I fought in October. The Cameroonian British guy, Ateba.
Where's he? Why am I not seeing him on the card?
He on Tapology. He's just right under Umar.
Oh, well. I'm not on Tapology. Where's Tapology?
Anyway, that dude is like ginormous. We saw him in Las Vegas while training there because he was on the same card. Yeah. My, he was scary. And like I saw him hitting like the bag by himself and stuff, and it's like it's really good like technical abilities as well, and I think that belief that he has because of the performances he has, and he's so like imposing. So that's someone that's.
Have we done a podcast since your last fight? We haven't, have we?
When did Tom Cyril happen?
End of October.
Man, I feel like it's all kind of blurring into one. To be honest.
Yeah, October 25th, yeah.
So we haven't done one since.
No, we did.
Did we?
Yeah, for October 4th.
Okay. Okay, where are we? So I've got Tapology pulled up now. Jamie's nodding. Jamie knows. I lose months of time, I do.
Sometimes you're like 3 weeks ago. I'm like,
I lose months of time. I got my age wrong earlier today. I'm surprised you're not mentioning that.
What were we watching? Oh, we're watching Arlovski.
Yeah, Arlovski,
and then
yeah,
you're like, "Oh, that's my age," and I'm like, "No, you're a year younger." And then he was like, "No, no, I'm not." He almost looked at me like, "Okay, okay, yeah," because you were so sure that you were right, sure, and it was your age, so it was kind of hard to argue with.
Still
you.
Not sure. I still think I might be 44. I'm 44 this year, right? So I'm 43 now.
Yes.
Okay. It doesn't seem to matter at this point. You know, it's just a gradual spiral of this.
That's although, why you gotta take Zappoli.
Look at you. I was literally, we connected there, B. I was just about to say the same thing.
That's why while I was gone, you did so much.
Look, I have to. I've cleared out my wardrobe and I thought to myself, look, I
man, he's got a lot of clothes.
I've got good stuff. The only reason why my wardrobe would make sense is if I was training 2-a-days. So we've got to get back on 2-a-days. That's why I'm on the T1. Like, I've got enough training clothes for another 40 training camps. So we need to get started.
I don't think I'm going to do that,
okay.
All right. So starting off the main card, we got...
But Nurmagomedov Figueiredo, though. How is that's, that not, that's, I feel like that's no, a main card fight. That's.
I'm mad at that, to be honest.
Who do you think's going to win it? I know we're not. I know it's like...
I think Umar's going to win.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
How? No, I said that like I don't believe you. Like how? How could he possibly? No, I mean, I kind of agree with you, but...
And I just think, like, he'll pick at him with kicks and then try to get Figueiredo to overswing. I think the wrestling, I think, yeah, just skill, age.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
Man. Okay. First fight we're talking about is Arnold Allen against Gene Silva. A great fight. A really, really good fight. Obviously, Gene Silva's coming off that loss. It's his first loss in a while. And I think it's the first time he's been stopped. Yeah, so he's got two losses by decision. One of them was a split decision, but they were a while ago as well. So last time he lost was 2018. I even think I was looking at this earlier today and he was like, yeah, so his first loss was a split decision at bantamweight. And then he went up to featherweight. It's like he's missed weight already in the UFC, hasn't he, one time? He's just a little bit too game and reckless for my money. I really like him, but I think a lot of his success has been based, sorry, a lot of his confidence has been based on his success. You know, like he's a bit reckless and he's a very much in the moment fighter. Dominic Cruz always gets excited when he's fighting because he's like, look, he's just grooving and he's just, you know, I like that. I like watching it, but I also like watching Arnold Allen, who comes in with a plan. Like Arnold's got a game plan. He knows what he's sticking to. Like we talked about the Chikadze fight earlier today, didn't we? Like it was a good game plan. There was some things he could have tweaked in it to make it a bit more efficient for himself, you could say, but it was a plan. He does his research, he puts the time in. You know, I wonder how Silva's going to be coming off that loss to Lopez. Because, I mean, it was a fun fight, but at times he was taken down, he was controlled on the floor.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember for that fight, because it was the same night as the Canelo-Crawford fight. So, obviously, I was with, like, the UFC team doing the media backstage, but it was happening at the same time. So they had like the little phone and they had Fabio's a translator, right? The one that's like, So he was telling one of the girls, like commentating what was happening during the fight because she couldn't look. And it was just so much excitement brought to that fight.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would say that I feel like his emotions are starting to get the better of him now. Like before he would maybe use it and, or maybe it's not before he would use it and it would benefit him and not anymore. Maybe it was like, it happened to be benefiting him and that doesn't mean it's always gonna happen.
Mm.
And
do you know what happened like after the Lopez crying fight?
Well, it looked like Lopez. It looked like
he was like talking to the camp, like talking to him. And then Silva was kind of sat, but he was kind of bloodied and a little bit dazed. And then he looked over and saw him talking and he was just kind of...
Well, he was talking to the corner.
Yeah, but like, was it aggro? Because it looked like he was kind of peaceful. It was like, hey, look, guys, you know.
I don't know. I feel like Diego Lopez, from my encounters with him, like he's super nice.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know,
he's like so respectful and everybody around him treats him as like... That's the respectful guy that always does the right thing type of thing. So I don't think so. I know there was a lot of like trash talk towards Diego before the fight. So I know he was kind of like angry and riled up about it. But then before, Silva was like crying in a bunch of interviews and he got like a bit much.
Yeah. There was one of I watched one of his earlier fights today. It was the guy, Weston Wilson, the guy who was like 6'4" that he fought and knocked him away. I mean, he like just punched his lights out for 4 minutes. But it was like that guy was, I mean, obviously he won that fight. And that's what I'm saying about his success kind of reinforces his confidence, because he was like fronting up to that guy when he got into the cage. He was like, I think the referee had to move him back into his corner a couple of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's like making a point of like looking at his opponent and like this kid, Weston, he was like crouched down in his corner and he was kind of like, dude, like, why are you wasting so much energy? Yeah. Was kind of the feeling from him. I mean, obviously he got, you know, he got beaten up and that reassures Gene Silva's like, yeah, I'm a killer. You know what I mean? But I don't know, that Diego Lopez fight just feels like it could have derailed that confidence a bit. Like he's an aggressive flow state fighter. So he's not necessarily making the best decision at the time.
Yeah.
You know, he's making the first decision that comes to mind sometimes, which is why his scrambles get chaotic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he can like overswing sometimes or just throw things that are like a spinning elbow or different like high fancy techniques that would work if you throw them with confidence, you know, like they do work. And because they have worked, they kind of continue to work.
And if you watched, you know, half as much MMA as you should and watched some Ong Bak in there instead. Like some of the elbows that he does where he's like flying. I like him. It was kind of a shame for him to get caught with one of those spinning elbows when he'd landed a couple himself. But so if you're Arnold Allen, what's your game plan? Because it's difficult to game plan for someone that's like stands switching and doesn't really know what they're going to do. Like, what if you're Gene Silva, what do you think his game plan is for Arnold Allen? Do you think he's got a plan?
I think he has a lot of confidence within of his own power. So that allows him to be in this flow state where he can not become like overly panicked about the situation. Like, I remember like him fighting Charles Jourdain, and like Jourdain was doing a pretty good job before he rushed into him, and Silva just stood and did a hook, and it was kind of like it unraveled whatever was in Jourdain's mind, and then like the fight completely changed after that. He almost went like, oh my god. And that's where Silva's good, when he starts like hunting you down.
Yeah.
When he starts to feel that, because
confidence.
Exactly. And then the opponents, I don't feel sometimes like they react in a way that will slow that down or match it. They react in a way like, oh, why are you so confident? Oh my god. And then more mistakes come out, in my opinion. And because he does have power, then like you have to respect it, because he throws it with a knowing of having power.
Yeah. So on the stats, it looks like Arnold Allen's an inch taller and has got an inch longer reach. Strikes landed per minute is stacked towards Gene Silva. Striking accuracy is 10% plus for Gene Silva. But strikes absorbed per minute is a lot higher than Arnold Allen's as well. Slightly more wrestling for Arnold Allen. Kind of equal takedown defense, slightly more submission attacks. But having said that, Arnold Allen's got a really good ninja choke as well. Do you remember his fight against Mads Burnell? That was one of my favorites to call. That was because I love both of them. I think they're both great fighters. Yeah. But like Arnold's got a lot of tricks in his arsenal that we don't really see, because he doesn't use them all the time. I was watching him the other day, and it stood out to me how similar his jab is to Brandon Moreno. You know, he kind of like hangs his weight on his lead leg and snaps his jab out, and it's so difficult to read it. And then Gene Silva on the other side's got more of that like gunslinger stance.
Yeah.
It's quite a long stance, like Eddie Wineland, Dustin Poirier, and Cub Swanson. It's like, let's go. You know what I mean? But he also does switch his stance, you know? Obviously more comfortable southpaw, orthodox, but
I think another thing about Allen is the amount he's able to have, like, footwork-wise.
Yeah.
Like, he does move around. He won't stand as still. What worries me is, like, the fight versus Dan Hooker, where he hurt him with a straight left and then kind of got a little bit overexcited and wild.
He got clipped, didn't he?
And he got clipped.
Yeah.
That
was a good
fight,
though, that was.
Yeah. So sometimes, like,
you feel that rush from... It's the O2 Arena, wasn't it?
It was the O2 Arena.
Yeah, of course, it makes sense. I've ran onto a punch in the O2. You love it. You love it.
But, like, in that situation, he either, like, learned from it and is like, oh, I'm sure I'm not going to make that mistake because of what happened in the fight. I'm not going to let Silva run me onto something like this, because he was clipping Diego Lopez as well in that second round.
Yeah.
Before
Silva's a bit less wild like that, though, isn't he? I mean, he's wild in the sense of what he chooses to throw. But he's not wild in the sense that he's like a slugger.
Hmm.
No? Am I misremembering him? I feel like he's a lot single shots, but random single shots.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Allen's going to have quite a specific game plan.
Yeah, he's more game plan.
Yeah. But the thing that's going to make it difficult for Arnold is this most likely is going to be southpaw v orthodox. And Silva's lead leg is really available, but Arnold's going to have to use his lead leg to attack the calf.
Yeah.
Which is really difficult.
Yeah, but he circles around the outside really well.
Yeah, he does. I liked him. I preferred him against Giga Chikadze when he was pressuring into the back foot. You know what I mean? We talked about this a little bit, but like people who are strikers will know what I'm talking about with that. Like, he started to smother that dangerous weapon.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, like with Giga Chikadze, you know what he's going to do. Like, you know his right leg. If you give him space, he's going to keep hammering you with it. Whereas with Gene Silva, it's like, is it going to be his left elbow or his right elbow? Is he going to skip flying knee? You know what I mean? It's like,
he's going to go back and do this. jump off the fence and throw something. Yeah.
I'd like to see Arnold Allen work some front kicks to the body. I think that could be really problematic for Silva's forward motion because he's very kind of ready to go all the time.
Do you think he'll try to take him to the ground? Because he does train at TriStar. You know, that's a lot of wrestling. And
it's just a lot of energy wasted. And the thing with Silva is he's as unpredictable on the ground as he is on the feet. So, like, you could spend a lot of energy, wasting energy, trying to control him.
Mm.
And he's just moving and spinning. And then, you know, you've also got his submissions to deal with. Like, he could be on a choke in no time. If I remember right, Arnold Allen was losing that fight against Mads Burnell until he got the ninja choke.
Mm.
You know, Arnold probably don't want to find himself in a similar situation. I do think clinching him might be a good idea. Because I think Arnold will be stronger than him.
Oh, have you seen him like recently?
Have you seen the I just love the gym he's got. John Gooden did a thing about it, didn't he? Like a day with, check it out, it's really good. Like they've got this like proper outdoor.
I've seen photos. Yeah.
Arnold Allen was always destined to be strong. If you see his dad,
he's always in the corner.
Yeah,
that really big guy.
I think Allen's going to be a lot stronger than him. It might be smart to pressure him like he did Giga, but with the intention of clinching him and slowing him down that way.
Yeah,
but with head pressure instead of level change takedowns, because that's where he's going to make his neck available.
Mm.
How do you see it going? I mean, I thought about that. You didn't know it was a picks podcast, did you? Caught you by surprise there.
No.
I can see the surprise on your face.
Because you got to, like, play it out.
Oh, okay. Go on.
You just asked me, like, out of nowhere. Sorry. We're having a conversation, then bam.
Bam. It's normally
have a summary.
It's normally you telling me to hurry up.
Okay. Yeah, well, this is a good fight. Oh, all right. And I want to know about it.
Well, tell us then.
I like Arnold Allen's movement. I like his in and out, and I think he can start to gain in the fight as Silva is still sort of like reading his opponent and having a good time. Because sometimes he'll get in the like, oh, you threw something great, like high five or something. So you can draw him out of attention, but he can also draw you out of attention if you're paying attention to that. So I think Allen is someone who is very, you know, focused in that. And he has a really nice straight left hand that he can catch people. And sometimes with the footwork, he starts, like, messing with your understanding of where he is. And then he pops you and he throws it really straight.
Mm.
So I really like that of him.
Do you see the similarities with Moreno and Arnold Allen?
Yeah, yeah.
I was just watching it the other day and I'm like, he's really like long, like heavy on his lead leg. And it's so difficult to judge where that lead hand's coming from. That's also why his pop cross is good, because he's already partially weighted on his lead leg to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just, the other thing that I was thinking as well was the circumstance that Arnold Allen's been in. You know what I mean? What is he, 20-3 now? But yeah, he had that mad fight against Dan Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
Then he had that win against Calvin Kattar, but it was awkward because of the knee injury, wasn't it? Kattar jumped in and landed on his knee and tweaked it, and they started the next round and was like over in a second because his knee was cooked.
Yeah, but I think like he was like taking over.
Yeah, no, for sure he was. But it almost kind of undermined the victory because it wasn't definitive. And then he loses to Holloway and loses to Ivlev. Never been stopped though, has he, Arnold Allen? And then that fight against Jakadze was really, really impressive. Meanwhile, Silva's coming off a loss to Lopez. I just don't think that's going to have done anything for his confidence at all. I wonder whether he's the kind of guy that can bounce back from a loss like that. Especially, you know, it's his first one in, what, 6 years? 5 years?
Yeah, he's been putting a lot of, like, redemption stuff on. Like, he created this, like, AI video where he was, like, in the cage and, like, it was his tattoo and it was like bleeding and stuff, and he pops out into the fight and then pops back in. And at first I was like, why does his skin look weird? And then I figured out it was
the tattoo
AI
on the back of his head, the barcode.
No, no, it was just because it was like AI, so it's a bit
but
weird.
That's what it is.
Yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
It's a barcode.
It's a barcode. It's like
going down like nerves. thing, right? And then it's like his wife is in front, and then he's like taking out his like wraps, and it's like blood everywhere, and then it goes back into clips of like him and actually fighting, and then his wife has a baby. Oh, and it was like a lot.
A lot.
And that's the only thing I think about Silva, is that sometimes it's like you gotta reel that in tiny bit. You like use it, let it take you, let it give you that power in the fight, but have some control of it.
Yeah. Some people kind of hype themselves up a little bit too much. Yeah. I have been guilty of this myself. Like, I have been, like, my very first fight, walking out to Pantera, was never a good thing. It was like I'd just drank half a bottle of Jack Daniels and I was ready to brawl. It was not a good idea. Mm. And I'd like, you can see the amount of energy that he burns. And like, you're thinking, like, he was burning that amount of energy while he was on a win streak, knocking people out and strangling them. And now he's coming off a loss. And it was like a pretty, like, the point where like Lopez was on the floor, like ground and pounding him, we just looked so comfortable, you know? I don't know. I think Arnold Allen's going to do it. I think it's going to be a tricky one because I think Gene Silva is difficult to predict. There's going to be moments where, like, Arnold Allen's got to be cautious. He doesn't do what he did against Hooker and run onto something if he sees Silva's hurt. But I just don't know whether we're going to see a better version of Gene Silva or whether we're going to see a more cautious version, which is just not as effective.
Yeah.
I think Arnold Allen.
Do you think the layoff kind of...
A little bit. How long is the layoff?
Well, July 27th, 2024. So like a year and a half.
For who?
For Arnold Allen.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about Lopez. I don't know. He's not the kind of guy that ever gets out of shape or stops training.
No, he's always at the gym.
Right. You know, I feel like he's kind of found that level. The level that he's at right now is elite, world class level.
Mm.
And I think everything now is down to him just making the right decisions to beat the person in front of him. You know, the danger is him being too much in his head and waiting too much on Gene Silva because he can be explosive. But he didn't do that against Chikadze. And the only reason why it might be different is because, like I said, you can kind of bank on what Chikadze is going to do.
Yeah.
Whereas with Silva, he kind of is like, okay, let me see what he's going to do here. Let me just wait and figure it out. He needs something just to kind of work through that. Like a good jab, control the cage, cut him down, stifle him as much as possible. And I just think Arnold Allen's going to be physically much stronger. I do. And I think he should use that in this fight.
Yeah.
Arnold Allen, I'll go decision though. You reckon he's going to get a stoppage?
No, I think decision.
Yeah.
For Allen too. All right, we got to move on because...
Oh, now you want to move me on. You see this, Jamie? Now she wants to move me on. Okay. So the next one is your weight class.
Natalia
Silva against Rose Namajunas. So this was originally Alexa Grasso.
Yeah.
Right? Rose Namajunas.
Yes.
Grasso's injured.
Yes.
So Natalia Silva's stepped in, but Natalia Silva just beat the brakes off Alexa Grasso. We watched that last night again, and it was just like Grasso just couldn't get close to her.
Yeah, she usually starts the fight kind of like racking up a lot of damage with her kicks on the outside and stuff, and then the opponents feel like they have to try and close her down, but she always is ready and like moving and hitting you with something as you come in.
Yeah, she never stops moving.
No, she doesn't, and like she's good to go for the whole time, especially for three rounds.
Mm.
You know, if she wins this and then fights Valentina, you get to the question of, okay, how is the five rounds? What if Valentina closes it? But like for three rounds, and I think she's really strong.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of like what would be good would be like Namajunas to mix in her grappling. But I think the strength and the amount, like the takedown defense, will be good for Silva.
Mm.
But if for example, Rose can find things in transitions of strikes, like if she can get her to overextend herself or something, or like set up other strikes on the second attempt.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Like once Silva opens up.
Yeah. 92% takedown defense for Silva. I'm just looking at how many times someone's attempted a takedown, though. Jazz Davisha has attempted six and failed all of them.
Yeah, that fight was awesome. I really enjoyed that fight.
One of seven for Teresa. The thing is, like, a big part of her takedown offense is just her constant movement.
Exactly.
She just never stops. I watched the Victoria Leonardo fight earlier today as well, and she's very, very accurate with her striking. Mm. Like, it's not the most powerful of striking. She peppers, and it's very quick. It's a little bit like the way that Joanna used to strike, but not quite as voluminous. You know what I mean? She's like, does a lot of damage. I'm not sure about the hip thing, though. Like, I feel like there's a timing to that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I also think it's dangerous having her and Salsa Boy on the card at the same time. He's got enough kids as it is. You know what I mean? If I have someone wiggling their hips like that around Salsa Boy, that's dangerous. So he might be 2-0 for the night. I think she's a lot of fun to watch. I think there's a way of fighting her. And I think that there are certain people that can do it.
Do you think Rose can do it?
I think Rose can do it. I also think Alexa Grasso could have done it, but she just didn't. You know what I mean? Like,
weird fight from Grasso.
It was, because she just, like, she spent the whole first round at kicking range without a kicking game, right? So she can kick a little bit, but her kicking game doesn't compare to Silva's.
Yeah.
Right? So she spent the whole round at that range, loses the round, realizes that she can't win the kicking game, has got to start closing her down, but then closes her down a little bit, gets tagged with something, then takes a step back and gives her a space back. Like, you've got to accept that you're going to get punched a little bit in that scenario. And I think the fact that she doesn't crack is like, okay, I'm going to get inside and get on her case. I think Rose is going to be able to use a lot of feints to draw her out.
Mm.
I think Rose is going to be able to get them to miss a lot, you know, especially with the kind of flicking high kicks that she uses. Like, Grasso was kind of adamant to be inside and block them.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Rose is going to be, she's going to be smart enough with her feints to draw those kicks out and then chase them back. That's what I would be thinking if I was Rose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there was someone else that she did that to. Let me just look at a record, because I'll remember. Come on, brain. It was Michelle Waterson.
Mm.
Get into range. Give her the impression that you're coming in. She throws something out there, and as soon as it's been fully expressed and it's on its way back, danger's gone, then you close in. Even if it's just feints. I do think Silva's good, though. I do think she's got all the skills to be able to just kind of pick Rose apart. Yeah. And if she does start to gain momentum, then...
I think, like, she's riding on such a win streak and a confidence in not only her sort of in her style, in the way that she fights. She is certain that she has her own style. Mm. It's not something similar to how anybody else fights. It's her own thing. So it's difficult for her opponents to understand what to do in that scenario. I know, like, she comes from Taekwondo, but she's adapted that very well into MMA, and it's something that's difficult to do, because usually you end up, you know, like, flimsy kicking and on your back and a whole bunch of problems that brings. Like, not many people have been able to successfully do that to MMA. And I think it's given her a very dangerous skill set. I think it's given her a lot of confidence. Mm. And I think her footwork and mobility and this wave that she's on is going to be quite, like, good for her to start at least taking over the pace and to win at least two rounds based on just her willingness to go and go and keep going, because we've seen, like, Rose with Carla Esparza be able to beat lulled a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, like, Blanchfield's super aggression towards Rose kind of got to Rose. Like, I know it was obviously Blanchfield has incredible grappling and it's a different skill set that was applied, but I'm just talking about the intensity.
Do you think if she beats Rose that she gets a shot at Shevchenko?
Well, she was supposed to be there.
It's just Manon Fiorot above her, but she's probably not going to have to fight.
But Manon Fiorot already fought.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if she's going to wait because she beat Jess to visit it in Canada.
Yeah.
Where she, like, stopped her. So I think this is kind of like the battle for who's next for Valentina in performance-wise. But I honestly, if she wins, I think she should get it. She's, you know, she hasn't fought for the belt yet.
Be fun and to
she
watch.
Was, yeah, she was the backup. I think they did call her for the backup. Right. She asked to be for it, but they didn't say anything until later. So, she's been training hard this whole time for strong opposition.
She seems less like a taekwondo fighter than... She stands less like a taekwondo fighter than Gene Silva does.
Yeah.
His long stance looks more like taekwondo. Hers is... It's a bit more... Yeah, it's not Muay Thai short, but it's... Her back legs kind of stays underneath her. That's why she keeps kicking her hip out like she does. You know what I mean? But... Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think Rose... I mean, I think Rose needs to start quite fast. I think she needs to think about winning the first round, which is, you know... Not always easy to do if you're inside your own head, and Rose might be a little bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Silva by decision.
Really? Yeah. I'm gonna go with Rose. I think Rose is gonna be able to use her feints and her experience. My concern is though that Rose is much better over five rounds. You know, kind of what we were talking about yesterday is like even. Like, a five-round fighter doesn't necessarily mean that you need five rounds to win, but it changes your pacing over five rounds.
Yeah, of course.
And I kind of feel like Rose is, like, she's better, she's good at playing the long game, but when she knows she can play the long game, she's more relaxed and she's a bit more calculated. I don't know. I think this is going to be a tough fight for her, but I think she might do it. I could see her taking a decision.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I think they're both at a bit of a disadvantage because, like, Rose was preparing for Alexa, and that's a very different fight to this.
Yeah.
A very different skill set. And how long has Natalia had to prepare for this? You think she's just been staying in shape?
Yeah, because she, I think she showed up as a backup fighter for Valentina versus Weili.
13 fight win streak.
Man, she's always training. She's not like. Yeah.
Did I do the match preview? So we got 5-4 against 5-5. So Rose is an inch taller, same reach, higher striking output. You see, this is all skewed because Rose has had so many more fights and long fights as well. But definitely, if Natalia Silva wins this, she's definitely a fight against Shevchenko next has got to make sense.
Okay.
Okay, next one.
Yes.
Are we on to the heavyweights?
Yes.
Okay. Derek Lewis versus Waldo Cortez Acosta. Were you laughing? Is it Derek Lewis?
Yeah.
He's always fun to watch.
He's funny.
Waldo's good, though. He's fast, very, very quick for a heavyweight. We watched a bunch of their fights today, didn't we? So, go on then, give me the rundown. If you're Derek Lewis, are you going to use your elite level wrestling?
Man, his little trips are good.
Yeah, but when he loses, though, he still gets because he got taken down. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I think sometimes he's taken people down out of pure surprise. You know, like even DC was like,
DC was popcorn. So happy was like, for
him. Oh my God, there he is, an inside reap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's had a lot of fights, man. Like, give him the.
Yeah. See, I think there's an obvious ace card here for either of these fighters, and I don't know as either of them will play it, is calf kicks.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. Cortez Acosta, when he fought De Lima, like, De Lima was just, he was literally kicking it like Tong Po was kicking that post in Kickboxer. He was just... All of his weight was going in, and he's kind of built a bit like a muscular pear as well, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Lima. He's like really big and heavy in his lower body, and he kind of narrows as he goes to his head. So all of the weight from his lower body was just smashing into Acosta's legs. It was like the first kick that hit him was like, oh no, this is not going to be a pleasant experience. And it just wasn't. I mean, he had good moments in the fight, but the commitment of those low kicks... And, like, both of these guys could take that advantage, especially Acosta, because Derek Lewis's knees kind of, they don't, He doesn't have the most athletic looking knees, does he? It's amazing how so quickly he moves. But like I've, and the other thing as well is, who was it that Acosta was fighting? I think it was Ryan Spann. It might have been Spivak, but he was landing good knees to the body. A couple of times he landed good knees to the body, good straights to the body as well. And my memory of Derek Lewis is he is terrifying when he's fresh and uninjured. Right? But they've also got this flip side of Derek Lewis, which is him running to the side of the cage holding his stomach like a little kid that's about to shit himself. You know what I mean? And he's like, like when he gets tired or something, he just kind of loses all of his composure. And that's where I feel like, well, it could work one of two ways, right?
Okay.
Like this is a fun scenario that could most likely happen in this fight, is that they're both kind of waiting a little bit, and you know, and then Waldo starts poking at the body of Derek Lewis, and next thing he lands across to the body, and Derek Lewis is like, oh no, that hurt, game over, and his whole composure changes and he starts to run away, and then Waldo goes, this is my opportunity, and comes sprinting in, and Derek Lewis just
clubs him
and
over
dust as he lands. Oppenheimer. Oh, don't get me started on Oppenheimer. Jamie, you're a movie guy. Did you like Oppenheimer?
Yeah,
I loved it up until the last, I think it's 20 minutes in. And you know when he's being grilled at the end? This is a segue. You can stay in the room. I'm talking to Jamie right now. The bit where the guy's grilling him,
yeah,
right at the end, he says nuclear. Kills me. Wounded me. Nuclear. It's such an easy word to say. And he was like, nuclear. I'm like, I had to switch it off. I had to finish it the next day. I was so angry.
This is like a very big pet peeve of his.
It's massive.
It's like, the thing is, really important.
The thing is that like I made the mistake of telling Sean O'Connell as well. So he always says it incorrectly at some point in commentary just to rile me. Always. But like the thing that annoys me is most of the time when I'm hearing it incorrectly, it's because I'm watching the news and it's Lord Admiral Vice Marshal such and such, and he's like nuclear. I'm like, it's in your job title, bro. You can't even say the word. If I can't say commentator, don't give me the mic, right? It winds me off the clock. But I was really enjoying Oppenheimer until it got to that stage, and I literally wanted to tweet at the whatever. I wanted to contact the actor and be like, bro, you must have read your lines, man. It must have been written correctly in your lines.
Is it Cillian Murphy that said it?
No, he said it at Cillian Murphy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And how did he not lose his mind? I mean, he's a stickler for detail, isn't he? Anyway, that was a segue that we didn't need.
Listen, this was going to happen.
I'm going to do a video at some point. I'm going to do a video at some point illustrating my point. You can not believe how many people say the word wrong.
I have a breakdown of the word.
It's annoys me. Anyway, next time you watch Oppenheimer, look out for it. Okay. So Derek Lewis is going to do what?
So he's going to come out right like chill. It's going to be like, what, Salsa Boy? And Salsa Boy going to be moving his hips a little bit. He's going to try and go with that jab. He's confident now. He just, you know, like, he's coming off a good thing. He's like, let me fight a whole bunch more times. And he's like, I got 10 kids. I got to, like, come, going to knock you out, right? I got fast right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, he's going to hit Derek Lewis, right, in the head. And Derek Lewis is going to go like this, and he's going to come back with some crazy wild punch and sort of rock him, and then he's going to throw a flying kick with his left leg to the head and get, like, yeah.
This is Derek Lewis.
Yes.
He's going to win by a flying head kick.
The switch head kick.
Okay.
Switch jumping head kick. Yeah. Not flying. Switch jumping head kick. And then he's going to go like this on the ground. And
he's going to slide up. He's going to say something offensive about his wife and the post-fight interview and swing his shorts around his head. Yeah, he's brilliant, isn't he? I actually think that Derek Lewis should change his nickname to this and adopt some kind of dance to combat Salsa Boy, and then they could do a dance off one of the rounds. Start off, first round, dance off. Salsa Boy can do his salsa moves. We can have, like, Derek Lewis can be like, you know, the bebop beast or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ballroom beast. There you go.
No, he's going to do the break dancing. Four. He's got inside leg trips now, you know, he's got trips and stuff.
Did you see that first inside low kick that Gene Silva threw? I know we're jumping around a bit now. Gene Silva threw on Diego Lopez. He like went down on one knee to throw the inside low kick. Like, yeah, it's not that Mortal Kombat game that we had in Vegas. We had this Mortal Kombat game in Vegas. It was like this, like it was like a table. Like built-in Mortal Kombat, and you both had a screen on your side, and it was amazing. It was the main selling point of the Airbnb. and like she found her guy, like she found her fighter, Jax. You know the guy with the metal arms. I went through the whole roster. We went through different Mortal Kombats. I'm like, nope, let's go on to the number three. I'll go back to Liu Kang. Every single person.
He's like jab cross, like you know front kick. And that's it. That's right. Just button mash, jab cross.
You couldn't even learn the basics of Jax. Keep it simple. Jab cross, jab cross. Anyway, it was a good game.
Plus, he's like, you know, super strong. So
yeah.
Anytime I played one of the girls, I would do a whole bunch of spinning stuff, complicated moves. The power thing move like this. Jax did a bad jab, and it was like, yeah, I'm going to be that character.
Okay, have you made a pick
That's
on
basically
this one
what Derek Lewis could do, just psh, on the power thing.
So 6'3 versus 6'4, 78 inches versus 79 inches. So there's not like they're pretty much the same size and everything. There's going to be a weight difference, though, isn't there, for Derek Lewis? Doesn't Waldo come in a little bit light for this weight class? Kind of feel like he does. No?
Yeah, I think so.
What's his Wikipedia page say? Oh, no, 262 on his Wikipedia page.
Yeah, comes out the limit.
Like Derek Lewis used to be a lot lighter than he used to be. You remember his first fight in the UFC? He was, like, quite svelte and it was, like, rock'em sock'em style. One thing I will say about Waldo.
Dude, he's had 30 fights in the UFC.
Who, Derek Lewis?
Derek Lewis. That's wild. Yeah.
They need to name like one of the octagon posts after him when he retires or something. They can't do the hanging of the jerseys, can they? Because we move around the arenas so much. One thing I did notice about Waldo's record, that's another thing we need to discuss as well. Waldo Cortez Acosta, WAC, GSP. We're going to have to shorten it, right?
Yeah.
It'd be WCA, wouldn't it? We need to do so. His name's too long.
Yeah.
You add Salsa Boy in there as well. It gets way too long. WCA.
No, you just call him Salsa Boy.
Salsa Boy. He does really well with consistency. Like, I was looking through his record earlier today, and it's like the times when he fights a couple of times in the year, he just, like, 2022, he fought February and then April. Then he fought in contenders in August, and then he fought in October and November. Beat Van der Aar and Chase Sherman. And then he had to wait between November and April to fight De Lima, and he lost that fight. You know what I mean? He only had two fights that year. But then when he's consistent, like 2025, look at him here. I mean, I know he's lost one to Pavlovich, but March, June, August, November, November. That's good activity for a heavyweight, you know? I think he should be in shape all year round and pushing to take any last minute fights because I just think
his last fight was super last minute. I don't think you get more last minute than flying in on Wayne.
Yeah, because he beat Delia. That was a weird circumstance, wasn't it?
I
don't know what you would do to kind of fix it though. Because like as the referee, you have to get in there and wave it off because it does look like the end of the fight. But then when you go to the replays and you can see it's always weird restarting a fight. It's always such... Like, I remember when Bisping and Anderson Silva, do you remember that? At the O2?
Mm-hmm.
And Anderson landed that really mad flying knee, thought he'd won the fight.
Yeah, he walked away and...
You kind of just... Yeah, you kind of just can't get... Like, your emotions go up and then...
And with a punch like that, that's crazy. Although he is, like, making fun of, you know, like, saying all these things about eye pokes and stuff, but... he has done his fair share of fouls.
Well, that was almost a bit of a comic repercussion.
Did you see Derek Lewis? He's like, I'm coming in. I'm going to like attack you in the eyeball. And I'm gonna, like, he's going to do all these fouls.
He is funny, Derek Lewis. I'll miss him when he's no longer a part of the roster.
All right, who are you
How
going
old
for?
Is he now? 40. Go on, Derek Lewis. I think Acosta's gonna pick at him and hit him in the body and hurt him and maybe TKO him.
Yeah, I think decision. I don't think a TKO.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. Okay, co-main event for Waldo.
For Waldo, yeah.
Salsa boy.
Although Derek Lewis signed a 2-fight win streak. As long as he doesn't lose enough fights to get cut, because we don't want to lose him, do we? Like that fight he had against Taito Iwasa, like you can't really count that as a loss. It was too much fun to watch.
Yeah. You know? I just think that, like, I think maybe Waldo's going to, like, pick him off. But also in some situations, like Taito Iwasa, like, land those elbows in the clinch because he does them really well. So I think pushing up against the fence, maybe landing elbows, getting some space, but being cautious is when you're getting out of range, like, not to be in range of him. Coming in with some wild shot, like on his last fight, it wasn't a wild shot the what he landed versus Teixeira, whatever his name is.
No,
like it was
pretty accurate.
It was accurate.
Quick.
It was like he was able to twist his body and stuff. But the other guy thought he was out of range, but he wasn't because he's able to cover quite a lot of distance. So you have to be careful on these, like getting out of ranges that you're also cutting an angle after. Because he can cover a lot of space and generate a lot of, like, he's good at kind of, like, building that back up so he can press it again.
Yeah. So you're going Waldo.
Okay.
Yeah. Decision.
Decision.
Okay. Co-main event. O'Malley versus Song Yadong. What are your thoughts? Like, O'Malley's a very... Yeah, he's in 2-fight losing streak now. I kind of feel for him a little bit because, like how many fights have you watched where the crowd are shouting "F O'Malley"?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like I really just feel like he really wants to be liked. You know?
Yeah, he seems to have like changed a bit in his like online.
He seemed a bit dejected, didn't he? Because he was where he was on the card for this one. Obviously, now it's changed because he's moved up, but. I don't know. I mean, the 2 back-to-back losses to Merab just kind of, like, does that define him? Or because I feel like
I think he's definitely, like, changed from it. I don't think it's had no effect because you can see him. He's like, oh, I've been humbled and I've been this. And even when speaking about Zipporia, like, oh, I shouldn't have called him out. And all of these other things. And with that, it depends on what the fighter does with it. It either makes them better or it makes them doubt everything and things that they were able to do before, they might not be able to do it because they don't have the confidence to back that up anymore. I think he definitely has really good footworks and movement and push-pulls, but as so many people have watched him, they've been able to get a little bit more of his timing for like his basketball thing down. You know, there's a few things that he does that do repeat.
Yeah.
But
at the same time, I feel like not many people have have been able to figure that out.
No.
Like Merab was just his pace was too much, and I don't think Yadong has got that much of a pace really. I feel like he edges forward. And he's quite calculated with what he's doing, but he's not got the same kind of game as Merab. And then like the fight with Yadong and Peter Yan, like Yan was patient and picking at him, did a lot of damage to him. And Yan's quite flat footed with not a great deal of like dynamic movement. And I feel like O'Malley can be like picking and gliding and like he's very calculated, he's very accurate, you know, and I kind of feel like Song Yadong's style is perfect for him to be at his best if he's confident enough to be.
Yeah,
like Merab beat him twice, but that's Merab, You know, like the last person aside from that to beat him was Marlon Vera, and he beat Marlon Vera, and he beat Marlon Vera.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like the timing of his knees, all that stuff will work well for Song Yadong. You know, I think as long as he can get back to who he was when he was, if we get the same version as the rematch against Marlon Vera, I think he beats Song Yadong. I think he beats him in the same kind of way, just being too quick, too slick, too many different angles, too many different looks.
Yeah.
And like Marlon Vera never really got started, and he's a little bit of a plodder forward as well. Like he's kind of snowballs as he starts to have success.
Do you think it'll be similar than like Song's fight versus Corey Sandhagen? Because Corey's also really loose, and he like draws you in. That fight ended in a doctor's like cut.
Yeah.
So that could also be, because when he fought Piotr Jan, didn't just like
both of his eyes cut.
Yeah, yeah. Like really, really bad. Yeah. And I think
with and the Sandhagen fight was before that. Was it one of the cuts? One of the same cuts? Do you think? Was it above his eye on the?
Yeah, they were both above his eye.
No, I mean, I'm talking about the Sandhagen fight. I don't remember where the cut was.
Look it up.
Yeah. Like he's had good wins. He's had good wins, Song Yadong, but I don't feel like he's found the level of. Yeah.
It wasn't like it didn't look exactly the same, but it was
through
like
the brow.
Yeah, it was around this area.
I think O'Malley's going to light him up. I think O'Malley's going to light him up. Like maybe him losing a couple of times to Marab and not being put on in a high spot on the cards kind of like settled him down in a positive way, kind of anchored him to what he was doing previously that was giving him success.
I think like he looks like that's what's been the case, or at least that's the information that's being put out.
Yeah.
That's
he looks
what
like he fell
appear.
Asleep on a newspaper with all the tattoos on his face now. My God. It's like, what are you doing, bro?
Man, it's so hard. Like, with the UFC and like the fame that these fighters get to ride through it and have it not change anything. Because then at the same time, it's like, oh, do this media, do this, do this, do this. Like, that's exhausting.
Yeah. And especially with him, when like he... Like, he's expected to be a particular way.
Yeah.
And play a kind of character, you know? Like, you can't have rainbow hair and then be normal, you know? Like, you just can't do it. Like, you've set an expectation when you walk in the room. And I think, and especially with him, like, it's like McGregor in a lot of ways, isn't it? I feel like he was not, there were times when he was not allowed to be the person that like himself because people wanted him to be the Notorious. And I feel like the more famous he got, the less people wanted him to be himself, you know? And like, he always had to be in character. And I kind of feel like Sean O'Malley was like that, but he's almost showing a little bit of the fatigue of being like that, you know?
Yeah. I think his ability to not, to just be like, this is not working for me, and be open about it.
Like what they do at their gym is it Tim Welsh's coach?
Mm-hmm.
I think they do a great job. Like I think they're very calculated and they're very studious in the way that they go about it. You know, and I think because they a bit like you know we were watching Naoya Inoue the other day, and it's like you've got Inoue and you've got his coach, and then his dad is standing in the corner and his dad's advising. But it's quite obvious that Inoue and his coach, who are kind of the same age, are like working on this project together, right? And that's different to a lot of places. A lot of times it's like Trevor Whitman and Gaethje. There's a coach and a fighter. Whereas sometimes when the coach and the fighter are a similar age, they've got a similar kind of openness to share ideas that you maybe not get between Gaethje and saying those guys in particular, but you understand that relationship's
different. The dynamic.
It's very much one way, whereas theirs is two way, much like the Inoue relationship with his padman.
Yeah.
Like when in that countdown show where they were having sushi and talking about the fighters, it was quite obvious that they'd both watched his opponent separately and they were talking about what they were going to do. It was wicked. And that knockout that he had with that counter right hand that split the 1-2. Like you can tell he does his research, and that's what O'Malley's got in his back pocket. I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to look good doing it as well. it'll be cuts, it'll be damage, I think. I don't know if he's going to be able to put Song Yadong away.
No, I just think like the cut, especially with the Corey Sandhagen fight being stopped like that with a cut that was quite similar.
I can see it being a knee.
Yeah, and with Piotr Jan, dude, that fight was... He is sick. He is like... I was watching it and I was like, wow.
Is that his new nickname? Yeah. Kung Fu Kid? Did he change his nickname? Is that
it's always been Kung Fu Kid.
I thought I heard in commentary that he's changed his nickname.
Oh, I don't know if it's a new one, but it's always been Kung Fu Kid.
How is it?
I'm going to go for O'Malley too.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to be able to get a stoppage or...
Yeah, I think a doctor stoppage.
Yeah, cuts.
Cuts, yeah.
I could see that. A knee similar to the one that Paddy landed on Chandler, which brings us nicely into the main event. So we're both going for O'Malley. Both, I think, a TKO. I think probably third round, though. You know, it's going to take a while to get to.
I think second.
Okay.
I think, yeah. Or like end of second because of the cut. Then the doctor gets brought in. You know, gotta make it dramatic.
Got to. Lick the back of your gloves. All that stuff.
No, that's it. John Silver would lick the back of his gloves. Of course he would. Yeah.
Okay. Main event. Justin Gaethje, Paddy Pimblett, interim lightweight title. 26-5 for Justin Gaethje, 23-3 for Paddy Pimblett. So, like, a lot of experience for Justin Gaethje at the high level, but still a lot of experience for Paddy Pimblett generally.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is something that I really like about Paddy, and he might be one of the last of this generation, of this type of fighter, because Paddy arrived in the UFC as a brand.
Mm-hmm.
Haircut, shorts, fans, the dance, like, all of it. And, like, and you saw the same thing with McGregor on Cage Warriors. Like, he came over ready to be a star. And, like, a lot of those shows have gone now.
Yeah.
You know? Like, UFC have just separated from LFA as well. And, like I know a lot of those shows are being replaced by Contender Series, but on Contender Series, you've got 10 people in the room and no buzz. And you don't get that charging into the crowd of fans in Liverpool. And do you know what I mean? It's like, it kind of makes me a little bit sad. You could probably hear it in my voice. Because I feel like Paddy's kind of carrying the torch, like one of the last of that generation. Because soon everyone's going to be in the UFC machine so early. Like when Jamie, were you at Till Wonderboy? Do you remember that fight? You weren't at that one, no. Like, I remember a talk around that one, because obviously, like, Till's the main event. It was in Liverpool. I remember there being a lot of talk around, oh, Paddy's got to be on the card. He's got to be here. And I remember there was a lot of different kind of talk around it, and, you know, why is Paddy not here and stuff. And ultimately, like, I don't remember whether I heard him say it or one of his teammates or something, but it wasn't time. Like, he wasn't ready. And like that, at the time I thought to myself, man, that's an interesting decision. But a surprising one, because Paddy was kind of a bit of a crazy party kid.
Yeah.
And that seemed like quite a mature decision.
Yeah.
And then when he made it, and then he not only made that decision, but he then went on to improve to the point where he has now. And he just looks like a... Like, compared to the guy that fought Soren Back, who looked like a kid.
Yeah.
Compared to him now, and, like, the work that he's done with Paul Reed at Athlete
Man,
Factory.
Man, he looks amazing. Considerably bigger than everybody that he fights.
You know, as well, and like, I'll give Paul one more shout-out. You know what's amazing about it is it's not just Paddy. It's everybody that comes through that gym. They have the same kind of gains like you did, and Nathan Fletcher, and Gittins, and Luke Riley.
Physically, but then, like, you could see from it just getting better and better, like, from fight to fight.
Yeah.
It's been incredible.
If Paddy had been on that card, he may have been in and out of the UFC cycle by now already. Because he wasn't ready to do what he's done. And what he's done has been incredible. Like, I mean, Gaethje is always one of my favorites to watch, just purely because he's blood and guts. But this feels like a shift. This feels like a new day, a new dawn. It feels like a Paddy Pimblett dawn.
Yeah, it's always a weird situation when you have one guy that's talking about it being his last run, and then you have another guy that's just hungry and coming up. Like, yeah, no, I'm
Gaethje was
I'm coming for
wasn't
you
it?
And stuff. Yeah, in the countdown, it was this entire time I felt that he's been a bit. This is my last run. When you've already fought for the title, I think, and like not done it the second time, it's almost like, okay, I'm gonna make it right, but then trying to go for it the third time, that takes some serious. I'm not saying that it can't be done. I mean the mind is incredible. The things that it can do and overcome is sensational, but you have to do that work, and you can't just let it do as it like cards fall as they may, you know. I think actively working towards that would helps. I think Gaethje's super dangerous, especially when he's able to roll with shots and have a lot of power, a lot of like generational power as he's moving. I know he like dips his head, but off the dip, he comes in and uses that a little bit like the kettlebells that we've been doing. That motion carries on, and I think the way that he might view his hand to be so heavy and relaxed all through the swing. I think that's very interesting. The thing I've seen about Paddy is that he's kind of looking at like your head or body as like this like target thing, like doesn't worry himself with anything else. He just, bam, that's what I have to hit, you know? And then it's like, boom, I gotta hit that. And he's... like with Bobby Green, as much as that fight was crazy, him to jump the triangle and stuff, he was being very cautious in the beginning. He went for the calf kick. He stood away. He didn't stand in front and go, "Hey, let's trade punches." And you know, he beat him at his legs, and then he was trying to close in. And that's when Paddy just looked at where his head was and hit that. It wasn't so much like a specific move. It was like, "I'm gonna hit that. I'm gonna hurt that." And I think that's why he's able to. When he feels a finish coming, when he hurts them, he's able to continue on that because it's not like, oh, I'm gonna look for a specific punch or something. Yeah. It's
no, he's just
that's
flows
the target,
through,
and he's like he's fighting you like, come here, you little twerp.
Thing is, you know, you watch like you go to one of those cage warriors in Liverpool where it's like, you know, four or five of the next generation guys, and you see the same thing. I mean, maybe not so much with a couple of them. Like Luke Riley's had some absolute bangers where he's just standing trading, but the vast majority of those guys in that camp, they wait, they find their opportunity, and then when they go, it's attack to the back to choke. You know what I mean? And it's a really clear path that they've had a lot of success with. But off that solid path that's having success, now you've got guys that are branching off and going, right, I'm gonna focus more on this. Like Luke Riley's really focused on his boxing. He's got great boxing and low kicks. Paddy, I think, has got good long range striking, and I think stuff like his knees and his chaotic stuff is where he's going to really catch Gaethje, especially because, like, I talked about this on Sub Radio the other day. UFC stats has got Justin Gaethje at 5'11" and Paddy Pimblett at 5'10". There's no way that, I mean, we've seen a couple of face-offs anyway, but obviously shoes and stuff. But there's just no way. Like, I would say Gaethje is probably 5'9", right? Seeing him standing near him, 5'9", I would say Paddy's 5'11", at least. And I would say he's still growing.
I've stood. I've seen both of them loads, and Paddy's like significantly.
He's significantly bigger.
Like,
so that's why if he throws one of those flying knees, it doesn't even matter if it doesn't land cleanly. It's enough to start that momentum of backwards movement.
And he's really good at riding it, like while he does it.
The dangerous place for Paddy is if his back foot's touching the fence. Because, like, I keep playing back the Gaethje against Barbosa and the Gaethje against James Vick, where that right hand just kind of closes the door along with the fence. And just, you know, and Paddy can get a bit tall and push, like tries to push away with his feet a little bit when he gets closed up. I mean, it has in the past. I think it'd be they're the times when forcing Gaethje to defend takedowns is the best thing to do. You know, like, Gaethje's not mad with knees, is he? He's quite upright and a bit stiff. He's got good low kicks, but he also leaves his head on the center line. And I think that's where Paddy can capitalize.
Yeah.
Countering low kicks, hurt him, knock him off balance, start that wild backward pedal from Gaethje because he's trying to get his head out of the way, flying knees coming up, all kinds of random stuff. And if you remember the Gaethje against Fazeev fight as well, the times where Fazeev went for a takedown and created a scramble, there were a couple of times where Gaethje's coming up and he's getting his neck tangled up or he's getting kneed in the face. So like, even if Paddy doesn't get the takedown, it doesn't really matter. As long as he creates a scramble where Gaethje gets out of shape, you know? Like, the danger is getting trapped up against the fence where you can't move and then Gaethje starts to close doors with power punches. Or if you feel that single necktie on the back of your neck. Because that's when he finished for Z, was it, the uppercut?
Yeah.
He's got a wicked rear uppercut.
Yeah.
But he ain't going to land it from a distance.
Paddy stands a lot further away than most people do.
Yeah.
Like, with the Chandler fight, you see him, obviously Paddy's a lot taller, but the way that he was fighting was frustrating Chandler to the point where he went to his corner and he was like, he's just too far away.
Yeah.
Just can't reach him. And you saw Bobby Green kind of feel the same way. And, you know, the corner was like, it's not that he's too far. He's just throwing one punch and you're coming back. You're not following with the stuff. But because he whacks you in the leg, like he throws it with so much intent. He's like a big puppy.
He is, yeah.
You know?
But the thing is, like, whack you with, if you look at the difference in stance between the two, right? Like Chandler's got that long stance like Gene Silver or, you know, Cub Swanson or whatever, really long stance, which just, it takes away some mobility, like
already
moving your feet,
yeah,
but gives you mobility with your upper body, right? Whereas Gaethje's got a real narrow stance. So like, trying to attack Gaethje's legs might be a risk.
Yeah, but so does Bobby Green.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, but it's I know it's different.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like there's going to be a point in this fight where Paddy's going to create some kind of momentum, some kind of chaos. He's going to come in and attack. Mm-hmm. Gaethje's going to dip his head. Paddy's going to catch him with a knee and it's going to hurt him or knock him down. And it's going to finish with a sub, but it will start with a strike.
Yeah, he'll hurt him first.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be kind of like with Oliveira.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Oliveira hurt him first, although he had hurt Oliveira, but he had hurt him first to get the rear naked choke.
Yeah.
And then Habib got a triangle, which is like Paddy's signature.
Yeah. I was there for that one. I was in the room, yeah.
Oh, I was there when...
Were you there for that one, Jamie?
Yeah, it was Habib's last fight, wasn't it?
Was.
Oh, wow. I was at Paddy's last one with Michael Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being backstage because they have you there waiting to talk to them after. So you see them come into the arena and then go in and you're like, Paddy has such blue eyes.
Yeah, he does.
And it's just like, they're so intense, especially with the fight. Normal, he's just chill, like doesn't care, probably eating something. I will say he's extremely, extremely nice. It isn't for camera.
No, it's not.
To say that he is the same in camera as off camera. There is no difference. Like, he will go to somebody and like help him out. I've never seen him say no to a photo.
No.
And my goodness, do they.
See the boxing match that he did with the dancing kid. My favorite video of Paddy is when he goes and knocks on his neighbor's door because his dog's done a runny shit. He still do that right now, won't he?
Yeah, that's the thing. I saw that and I was like, it's hilarious, but that's Paddy.
He could turn that into a series. Can you imagine? Just like doorbell cameras of Liverpool and just like, it's just Paddy popping up going,
yeah,
hey, I just, oh man.
But it like, funny. So right before, you know, he has those really scary eyes that, I've seen because of being backstage and knowing fighters and all this, I've seen, you know, many, but there's few that really stand out to me. And I just can't quite pinpoint why, but maybe it's something they said, maybe it was their demeanor, maybe it was the way that they looked. But Paddy, before making his UFC debut, I once accidentally saw him, I think I've said this before, like on a Cage Warriors. I was going backstage, I don't know, I was getting some water or something. And then I saw him just look like, like demented. And I was just like scared. I was like, oh my God. And to see that before he fights, and he was about to walk out, and it was like the arena was shaking.
Yeah.
With, oh, Patty. Like that was making my heart go, because the amount of people, well, throughout the night, not even right before he walked out, but when he was about to walk out, and for him, it's not like, it just gives him this super strength.
Jamie, here's a question for you. Do you remember the event, the Cage Warriors, where Tom Aspinall broke Bukachu's leg? Was Paddy on that card? Do you remember? There was a particular event that...
That was Cage Warriors
103? 103, was it?
Or 102?
No, maybe not then.
I think I'd remember if he was on the card.
Yeah.
I don't think he was.
No, I don't remember which one it was. It was one of the few Cage Warriors fights where he was like main event or something like that. And he won the fight, and there was a whole bunch of kids in the front row, and they all had the Paddy Pimblett haircuts and the North Face coats on and stuff, and right after the fight was over and he'd won, they all went crazy, and they're just like, you know, dancing and singing and stuff, and they knocked over the lights and the barriers and everything all around the cameras, and we were like just about to like kind of close the show, and it was, so Chris Fishgold was the main event. It was Cage Warriors 78, I think it was.
Trying to find it.
Yeah, he stopped the guy in the first round. And it was just like, I just remember the whole place going up and all of these barriers came crashing down. The next thing I turned around and looked, and all these kids are just putting everything back. They're like realigning the barriers and folding the chairs back out. And I'm like, that's a different type of MMA fan. Like, they'd have been stabbing each other in my day, and now they're putting the stuff back. You know what I mean? It was, yeah, I'm excited for him. I think it just feels like a change in the guard. I'm a big fan of Gaethje, but I like his emotion in his voice on the Countdown show, and I think Paddy's going to be able to draw out a mistake, and
I think, and land that lately knee or... Paddy's focus has been turned up,
yeah,
a lot of notches,
yeah.
I think he's really...
I wonder if it's had anything to do with his twins. That changes a lot of fighters. Yeah. But he just seemed to like focus for the last sort of few fights. It just seems to have tuned him in. So you're picking Paddy?
I'm picking Paddy.
How are you taking it?
I think decision.
You reckon, yeah. Five rounds. It's been a while since Paddy did five rounds. 2017, I think. Yeah, I think Paddy's gonna sub him.
I just think
it's gonna be a combination of things. It's gonna be a combination of maybe a bit of fatigue and a bit of recklessness, but I think Paddy's gonna catch him with something, catch like that knee that he landed on Chandler. I think if he lands that starts the beginning of the end. And I think Darces and Anacondas and any kind of neck attacks, that's where Paddy gets the fight done. Probably third round, late third, early fourth.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Should be a good card. Very much excited for it. Thank you for staying with us till the end. Shout out to Zaply. Try Zaply.com. Use the code OUTLAW15. That'll get you 15% off. The creatine's awesome. The T1 is fantastic as well. Make sure you check them both out. Shout out to Athlete Factory and Paul Reed. Doing great work with the Next Gen guys and everybody else who's got up there. And shout out to you, my beautiful love. Thank you for joining me for the podcast. And Jamie, also sitting behind the camera, doing his thing. Enjoy the fights, UFC 324, and we'll see you next time.